At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Today on The Grave Talks, The Secrets of Goatman's Bridge with author Becky Vickers. Nestled between the Texas towns of Denton and Copper Canyon is an unassuming old bridge steeped in demonic legend. Goatman's Bridge is a humble wooden structure with an eerie reputation. Goatman's Bridge isn't just a relic of the past, it's a hotbed of paranormal activity. Many believe the surrounding forest is haunted by an evil presence summoned by satanic rituals, with documented accounts of physical attacks. Legend has it that it is haunted by a half-goat, half-man creature with glowing red eyes. There's a legend suggesting that this demonic presence was summoned by the ghost of a black goat farmer who the Ku Klux Klan brutally lynched at the bridge. But others believe that the bridge is haunted by malevolent spirits conjured by local occultists who are said to have performed sacrificial rituals in the nearby woods. Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation with author Becky Vickers about her book, The Secrets of Goatman's Bridge, True Tales of Chilling Paranormal Encounters at One of the Most Haunted Bridges in America. Well, Becky, thank you so much for being back on the show. If you missed our last episode together, go back and look for it. It's the 1899 Bolton Street House. And we were talking that day about a book that you had written about Goatman's Bridge. And I said, would you consider coming back? I will read the book and let's discuss it. And you said, absolutely. So today we are talking about Goatman's Bridge.
Okay, yay!
It is a freaky, freaky place. So we're going to dive into that. But, you know, I would absolutely listen to the other episode too, because it gives a lot of Becky's background and kind of what you're up to now as well as doing tours and stuff. But you have this 1899 Bolton Street house that's quite haunted. And it was a very interesting episode. I really enjoyed it.
I did too, Carol. Thank you. It was a lot of fun. And it's fun to share stories about what's going on, mm-hmm. you know, in the paranormal world.
And you know what would be fun too, is like a year from now, since you haven't had the house, what now, 4 months-ish or so?
Yeah.
It'd be fun to circle back in like a year and see like the progress you've made, maybe with familiar spirits or things that keep recurring or just different things. You know, it'd be kind of fun to compare that episode to another one in a year.
Oh, I'm totally down for that, for sure.
I'm going to make a note of that. Now, so tell me a little about Goatman's Bridge, and how did you, first of all, hear about it, and how did you become interested in it?
Well, I've lived in the Lake Dallas area for years and years, and just random people would say, have you ever been to Goatman's Bridge? And, you know, I didn't really think much about it, because what the stories I was hearing was, it was, you know, a goat man that jumps out and grabs people off of the bridge. And to me, it was more monster-like, I guess you could say, instead mm-hmm. of paranormal. But then I'm like, okay, you know, I just need to go check this thing out for myself. And I went down to the bridge. And first, it is just really creepy. Now, that's 20-something years ago that I first started going down.
20-something years ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
Long time. But the woods were super thick. It wasn't as popular then as it is now. So, you know, I just took some equipment down there just to see what's happening down here. Why is this the talk of the town? And, oh, my gosh. I mean, it was like I could just feel the presence of spirits around me, like just people. First, I didn't feel anything monsterish or any of that sort of stuff. But I'm just like getting great EVPs and this sort of thing. So that was it for me. I mean, just going down one night and experiencing the place, the location for itself. You know, I just took a deep dive in to the historical side to see what I could find out about it. And that just led me down a whole different path. And then I found myself out there, you know, every free moment I'm down at Goatman's Bridge trying to find out what's really going on down there. And unfortunately, it has quite the dark history.
So when did you decide, in the process of researching the bridge as well as investigating the bridge, that you could write a book about it?
Oh, that was a long time in the making.
Because I
didn't want to write about things without having some backup, per se, without talking to historians, people that's lived in the area, what were their experiences. But I would say within, you know, it sounds like a long period of going down there, probably 3 to 4 years, and really just collecting evidence and realizing, hey, you know what? This has got some dark stuff to it. And there are some things happening to me and people with me that aren't, you know, too much fun. People getting scratched, people getting pushed, people getting sick, violently sick. And so at that point, I'm just like, you know what? I took 3 to 4 years to find out all this information about the old town, about the legend of Goatman and who's supposed to be haunting the area. I need to put it together. I need to put it together for people before they visit, of the spirits that I've encountered, what they might encounter. And there you go. And the book was born.
You know what I find so interesting is that so many cities have a bridge, like we have one, and it's probably 4 or 5 miles from my house. And ours is called Theorosa's Bridge. And it's kind of got that, the baby crying stories and the mother who threw the baby from the bridge, or the mother jumped with the baby off the bridge, or there's all kinds of variations. Now, I don't know if the bridge is truly haunted or not, but what I find so interesting with this bridge and your experiences is that you had experiences there.
I did. And it's funny because I have never heard of Goatman until I lived here, and the locals would talk about, oh, you know, the Goatman down at the bridge and this, that, and the other. I never had heard of Goatman. I mean, that really wasn't a part of the paranormal terminology, per se. But then, you know, it's funny, after I've written the book, there is several states that have a similar, maybe not quite the dark history that this bridge does, but they have some sort of legend of the goat man and, you know, that it's going to come get you or whatever. I was quite surprised by that because I had never really heard that before.
Now, let's go back in the history of this area, because this is Alton. Do you pronounce it Alton, Texas, or is it like Alton?
Nope.
Or something? Alton?
Alton.
So let's talk a little about the history of the town.
Okay.
Because there's some other people haunting the bridge, and we'll kind of go into them one by one. And I don't want to give away absolutely everything, because I think people should read the book as well. But let's start with the area.
So the area was quite small, and it was an actual residential sort of, when you think of watching old Western shows with the dirt streets and the one bank and a saloon and all of that sort of stuff, that's what Alton was. It had one bank, it had a saloon, it had a blacksmith, all of this sort of stuff. But it's built along Hickory Creek, and that is a river that connects to a big lake here that we call Lake Louisville. Long story short, it just couldn't make a go of it. With different county seats and all of this stuff, you know, they're trying to be an official town and all of this sort of thing. But also, the water was very, very contaminated. At the time, it was a major cattle crossing for people. And, you know, what do? They pee and poop in the water. And so that this is not a running creek or river, it kind of settles, right? And so there was a lot of contamination, a lot of bacteria in the water. And the kids would go play in the creek while the parents would do all the farm chores and this sort of thing. And so there was just a lot of death. It was just a real struggle for the town. And it eventually just dissolved and moved to what we now know as Denton, Texas.
You know, and that happened all across the country. So many towns out here in the Midwest, they would, we're going to be the county seat. And then it's like, doesn't really make sense. Then that town just kind of turns into a ghost town.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Now, there was a resident there that I'm going to say really the legend of Goatman's Bridge traces back to Oscar Washburn.
That's correct.
Okay. You want to tell a little of his story?
Sure. There are actually some Washburns still in our area here, but they want nothing to do with the history nor the legend associated with the name, because I did try to interview some of them, and because it is a very, very tragic and horrific history,
it is.
You know, they just don't want any part of that. But Oscar was a goat farmer, and he sowed goats for a living, so he would bring his herd into town on the weekends and sell these goats for money. And he became quite popular with the town folks. I mean, his wife did sewing. She did a lot of mending for the ladies. And so he became very popular with the town people. But back in the mid-1850s, unfortunately, in North Texas, as well across the U.S., the KKK was extremely prevalent in the area. And to have an African-American goat farmer be successful, be well-liked, just wasn't going to work for them. Just, you know, they didn't want any part of him being successful in their town. So one night, as Oscar was coming home, crossing the bridge, he was greeted by a big group of Klansmen that proceeded to hang him from the bridge by a noose. And that's where Oscar's story ends. The Klan later came back to check on, to make sure he was dead and all of this. There wasn't anything there but a noose hanging. So they went to Oscar's farm. They burned his house down, you know, murdered his family, because they thought that he would be there, but he wasn't. There was never, ever any, no one ever knows what really happened to Oscar past the point of being thrown over the bridge. So it's a horrific story. Mm. But that is where the legend comes from of Goatman. You know, it's supposed to be Oscar that's been summoned up, you know, with the two legs of like a goat head and this sort of stuff. But I want to make clear my opinion on this story.
Okay.
I don't think Oscar is a goat man. He is a very nice spirit that we communicate with quite often down at the bridge. But he loves talking to people. My opinion is there is some sort of mythical creature out in the woods around the bridge. I've seen it once. Only one time ever have I seen this thing, but I believe it's because it was conjured here. It was summoned here by black magic. I think that someone, some group, took the legend of Oscar and summoned this mythical creature, which is, you know, today's modern terms, party animal, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, man. That's this guy has no respect. This creature has no respect for women, all of this sort of stuff. I think it's two different things. That's my opinion.
And I'm with you because when I was reading the book and the way you talk about Oscar, he just seemed like a good guy and that everybody liked him. And I think there was even a story, something in there about one of the Klansmen was like, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Because even he liked the man.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't seem like he would come back like that to terrify people and scare people. You know, maybe he would terrify those people.
Right.
But, I mean, regular people, it didn't make sense that he would be like that.
No. I mean, of course, would he want to be revengeful? Maybe. I mean, you know, they burned his property. They burned his house down and murdered his family. Of course, he would maybe want to get revenge, but maybe only on the people that participated in that. I don't see Oscar being this horrible thing that, you know, lashes out at people and in my experiences, scratches them, makes them sick, this sort of thing. This is something else doing that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And in fact, there's someone else that does make sense. That was that evil of a person.
Yes.
And when I read his story, in fact, I wrote a note. This might be one of the most horrible people I've ever read about. That's what it says.
Agreed.
In my notes.
Agreed.
He was a horrible person. So I'm like, maybe that could explain that.
Oh, 100%. I do. The guy's name was David Curtis Stevenson, and he went by Steve, but he was the Grand Dragon of the KKK in the area. And across the United States, he had, you know, links to lots of political and very powerful people. I don't think he was at the bridge the night that this took place, but do I think he had a part in it? Absolutely, I do. I think he gave direction. But this was an actual living, breathing person. And I can tell you, Carol, writing the book, you know, being a ghost hunter, you read death, dying, tragic stuff, all of this massive injuries, this sort of thing. But this guy is the guy that got to me absolutely the most, where I would be reading court documents of what he had done and what he said, and I would have to take a break. It would be overwhelming, and I would just think, I can't believe somebody so freaking evil actually lived and did the things that this man did. But I most certainly believe that his spirit is out at the bridge, still tormenting, particularly women. Lots of women have experiences out there that I think is Steve.
Now, did he have a connection? Was Steve from Alton, or was he kind of connected to that general area so it would make sense for him to be there, right?
He was actually up in Missouri, I believe. Don't quote me on that. I could be wrong. It's been a while since I wrote the book, but I believe he was up in that area. But he also, at one point, married a woman mm-hmm. from Oklahoma. And so that is very close to Alton. It's, you know, within hours, you could be at the bridge from Oklahoma where this lady was. So, I definitely just still think he had connections. Again, I don't think he was physically there that night, but I think he knew all about it and was in on it.
You know, because you don't know everything that he did. And if he was involved at that level with the KKK, he could have been anywhere. You don't know. And back then, you know, it wasn't like we had GPS tracking things on phones. You know, he just goes wherever he wants. And especially with someone like him, I think he could go somewhere, be horrifically brutal to a woman, and then leave. Go visit his friends, and everybody's just turning their heads because it's Steve. And
mm-hmm.
he had power.
And he had a lot of power. A lot of power. He married a lady named Madge Almondheiser. I'm not saying her name exactly right, but the things that he did to this poor lady was unspeakable. And even on her death certificate, it, long story short, said that she died from cannibalism because he had bitten and beaten her so badly. But she was in the hospital and had someone take down the story of what she had been through and what this man had done to her, which was just unspeakable. And when he went for sentencing, because he was so powerful, it didn't really matter what he had done to this lady. The judge actually said, it's actually in a document, that he said, well, I don't think that Steve is a bad guy.
Oh, my God. Maybe
who the hell says that? You just, this poor woman was beat and raped repeatedly and her skin ripped from her body. And you don't think he's a bad guy? Are you freaking kidding me?
And it wasn't like she didn't have the wounds to back it up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was documented. She herself had had somebody write down from her mouth everything that she had experienced. Mm. And how, you know, again, it was back in the early 1900s, late 1800s. But they, again, politically, he had such connections that the judge went on record to say he didn't think he was a bad guy. I'm just like, what the hell is wrong with people?
You know what would make sense, though, if a caring and compassionate spirit like Oscar was still there to prevent someone like Steve from harassing people and terrorizing people?
Yeah, I think Oscar is a bit lost, even though through, you know, our EVPs and stuff like that. I think when I say lost, I may be confused, it might be a better word. He doesn't understand why this happened to him. You know, what did he do wrong? You know, he did nothing wrong. He absolutely did nothing wrong. But I think he definitely hangs out at the bridge to communicate with people and visit with them. And yes, protect them. But if you're doing like EVP sessions with your equipment and stuff, when Steve is around, no other spirits are. He's very dominating of the space for sure.
And you have EVPs with him, don't you?
I do. Ugh. I do. I have some really good ones. Yeah. He's an ass. I mean, it's that's a moderate word. Yes, I have some really, really good EVPs. And, oh my gosh, just a horrible, horrible person.
And between investigating there and having, you know, EVP sessions where you're picking up on this horrible person's voice, and then you've researched him so in depth, was it hard to get that out of your mind? There's, I guess, should be two parts. And then when you are there and you do get an EVP from him, I would be like, I don't know. I'd be afraid he'd follow me home or something.
Oh, I've definitely been scratched. You know, because he himself was so, you know, grand in the when his presence was, when he was a real living person. He still thinks of himself that way in the afterlife. So anybody that challenges him, you know, like, you know, I might say, you know, Steve, I know what you did. I know everything that you did. You know, there can be some dangerous things that happen for challenging him. I've been scratched. I had some things sitting in my lap. And I was talking about in his later years, some things that I had known that he did. He never changed, y'all. He never mellowed with age, any of that. He raped a school teacher when he was in his 70s. I mean, it was just horrific. But yeah, I mean, I've had things knocked out of my lap. And so I've definitely encountered him firsthand.
Are you ever, I don't know, I don't know if afraid is the right word, but that would be the word that would apply to me.
Yeah.
I would be afraid of encountering him there and interacting with him there and bringing him home.
I have definitely learned over the years that when he starts coming through and communicating, I stop. I don't want to talk with him. I don't want to communicate with him because he is extremely powerful. Just, you know, if for those of your listeners that saw Ghost Adventures with Ashley and she had this big meltdown when they were filming at the bridge, 1,000% I believe that was Steve, you know, trying to possess her. She knew nothing of the location. And that poor girl quit the show. Like, legitimately quit 1 week later.
And she would have seen some stuff on that show prior to that. It wasn't like she never had had an experience. That's what the show is all about.
So I tried not to communicate with him before, for exactly what you just said. I don't want him coming home with me. I don't want to misstep when he's involved, you know, that I didn't say my protection prayer correctly, or, you know, that I did something wrong that he is able to follow me home. So when he's around, I have learned, like, I've shut it down. Shut it down. I don't want to talk with him.
Do you also feel differently on different nights? Are there times where you go to the bridge and you're like, he is here?
Yes. There was one night, and this is even embarrassing to talk about, but there's a little girl out there was an actual citizen of Alton. Her name is Rebecca, and she was 14 years old. And one night, I could feel Rebecca. She's extremely playful, and she had been following us along all night long. And we got to the center of the bridge, and I kind of looked over, and in my mind's eye, I could see him hanging on to her, like just kind of laughing, like, look who I have, look who I have. And oh my gosh, Carol, I went into this full on, let her go, let her go. And then I'm just breaking down, sobbing, because the thought that he could do anything to that young girl just was more than I could handle. And so in front of all my group, my tour group, you know, I'm screaming, let her go, let her go. And they're like, what the hell? This lady has lost her mind. And then I'm just falling to my knees and overcome with sorrow and just, you know, please, Lord, protect that child.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't imagine, because he's so evil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like it kind of makes me think that he did that for your benefit.
Oh, I felt that way. I felt it was like, I, for lack of a better term, look at me, Becky, look what I can do. Mm-hmm. I am still very, very powerful. And, you know, you can't touch me on the other side kind of thing. And I could see Rebecca's face and the fear in this child's eyes. And he just had like this smirky grin, like, you know, I have her, and I'm going to do with her whatever I want kind of thing. It was just horrible.
You know,
it's only happened once.
But it makes me think that, you know, in death and with time, so many people forget the stories. And so, you know, and especially then, you know, news didn't travel like immediately around the globe on a phone. It took months, and you might not ever know what happened in San Antonio if you live in Minneapolis. You know what I mean? And
right.
So a lot of news didn't even travel. So a guy like him could do all these horrific things, and the word might not ever get back to where he's been or where he's lived. Nobody knows. But then with time, the story fades even more, and now nobody knows his story, but you know his story.
That's right.
And
It's kind of like when, you know, not saying anything about young people, but sometimes young people will do bad stuff, right? They get into trouble or whatever, and they never grow out of that. Like, they become these nasty humans. But maybe they move away or they do different things like you're talking about. We didn't have a phone where we could call and say, hey, this guy's coming to your city. Yeah, you need to watch out, you know, or going to move to your neighborhood. You know, be careful for your kids. So he could definitely do all kinds of things. And I don't know, Carol, he was so powerful. I'm not sure that it mattered to anybody.
You know, and it's, that sort of thing still happens with powerful people. They get away with a lot.
Absolutely.
I mean, look at what's going on with P. Diddy.
Like, yes, in the news these days, I'm like, you're right.
It's like, why did that whole story take? I'm not here to judge him. I don't know. Wasn't there. But right. I'm just saying what I've read. Doesn't look good for him. But man, no, it's just a guy like him. Nobody, it's not like his story is still around for most people. They haven't heard of him. So most people who would go to the bridge wouldn't know a thing. Or they might not even know Oscar's story or Rebecca's story.
Exactly. And that's one reason I wanted to write the book. And I don't know if you noticed, I tried to talk about the spirits that I've encountered and how I've encountered them. Mm-hmm. Like Eleanor Daughtry, she's a very kind lady that's Rebecca's mother, and she manifests by smells. You will get whiffs of baking bread, peach cobbler, this anything food related, because she loved to bake. And that's what you will smell in the woods when Eleanor's around, is this food. And so I tell people, talk about baking, talk about what she's going to have for dinner. So with each of the spirits, including, you know, Steve, I tried to give a little insight to their personalities and why I think they're there and how you might communicate with those spirits.
And with the Eleanor's family, the Daughtrys, what happened to them?
Well, the Daughtrys had 11 children, two Rebecca and one, her younger brother that was two, died very young because of the bacteria in the water. You know, just back then, the best you could do doctor-wise for something like that, an infection, was, you know, mom could make you comfortable. But there was no cure at the time for, you know, any kind of illness to do with, you know, stagnant water and germs and bacteria infections. But they eventually, several of the sons became political people around the local area, and Eleanor and her husband just, you know, passed in as the past of old age, and several of the family members are buried just, gosh, less than a half a mile from the bridge.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with author Becky Vickers about her book, The Secrets of Goatman's Bridge, True Tales of Chilling Paranormal Encounters at One of the Most Haunted Bridges in America. You can find the book on Amazon, and you can find information about Becky and her tours of Goatman's Bridge at becksghosthunters.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, you could become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there, all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.